Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for October the 17th in the year of our Lord, 2020. This is hour two of two. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful, restorative solutions we still have at our fingertips. And as you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. And a lot of people say, Sam, your introduction's kind of long, buddy. Why do you do that over and over and over? Man, I need a button just to press fast forward and skip over that. And my response is, with modern technology, you can certainly do that. But the reason we repeat that over and over and over and over is because we want to be very, very intentional and clear about what we're doing and about our efforts here. We are peaceful. We are nonviolent. We want the truth, and the truth shall set us free. We want to educate and inform our American friends and loved ones and family. Because you know what? We care about the next generation, our children, our grandchildren, and we want to leave a free country for them as well. And to do that, it takes understanding the relationship between God, family, and country. It takes an understanding of who we are. It takes an understanding of what we need to do to preserve liberty. And it's not easy with the media, with the left-right dishonest paradigm, with all the discussions out there. It's very easy to get off kilter and go, we got to have another answer. We got to have somebody's got to bring a new idea to the table. We need a certain individual to be our savior leader. That person, ladies and gentlemen, would be Jesus Christ, and there is no substitute. Let's be very clear. That's why it's about God, family, and country. You know, our founding fathers said, you know what? Our government's only good enough for a moral, religious people, and it's ill-equipped for the governing of any other. Okay, so we must be a moral, God-fearing, honest people. We must obey the laws of God. And when we do, God Almighty promises us biblically that he will protect us. He promises us that, you know what? He will heal our land and protect us. But it takes some work on our part. I want to quickly summarize last hour because it was so vital coming into this hour that I think it's absolutely relevant. I had on the good sheriff, former Sheriff Richard Mack, with me, CSPOA.org. And we talked about this idea that the media and the government are now in bed together and are intentionally engaging in political warfare. Their goal, isolate, demonize, and destroy all peaceful American patriots. That's what's happening right now. And the proof in the pudding, ladies and gentlemen, is this. Constitutional Michigan Sheriff Darleaf said Whitmer arrest may be lawful due to her crimes against the Constitution. And you go, wait a minute, what? The sheriff's backing kidnapping? No, not even close. So at the crux of this media story where the mainstream press lies and wants you to believe, hey, this plot against the sheriff, plot against the governor, it wasn't a plot. Are they trying to commit a citizen's arrest or was it a kidnap attempt, Darleaf wisely asked. If it's a felony, you can make a felony citizen's arrest. Leaf continued, citing Michigan state law. Ooh, the law. Yeah, that interesting thing. We can't convict them in the news media, continues the sheriff. They deserve an honest, fair trial. In fact, these guys are innocent until proven guilty. Okay? Anyway, the story goes on, except to say, look, at the crux of the discussion is they want you to believe how bad this plot was, that it was a militia plot. They're using all kinds of scare words. First you isolate, then you demonize, then you destroy. I don't know the truth in this case. But I know this, they never got a chance to carry out a citizen's arrest, so it's pretty hard to say that was not their intention when you never let them carry it out. But I'm saying it was a citizen's arrest because that's what they're claiming. And that's what the law supports. And I'm not jumping to any other conclusions until we have proof positive otherwise. And so, folks, you got to not fall for the mainstream press manipulative. Was it a peaceful citizen's arrest because the governor's committed crimes? Or was it an attempt to kidnap the governor? Well, the debate rages on, but I'm telling you not to convict them in the media. I'm telling you to let due process happen. Let's have the transparency and the rule of law. And you know what? Whoever committed a crime, and it may be the government and the FBI, if they were carrying out a peaceful citizen's arrest and they were stopped in doing so when they had every right legally to do so, it might be the government that committed the crime here. Time will tell. But the problem is, and this leads to our next guest, is that it's getting so murky and muddy in America today that it's very hard to know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. All right? So our guest today is Lee Southwell. And she saw anarchy as an eyewitness account in foreign lands. And she's going to be speaking tonight in Utah. That's tonight, October 17th. That's tonight, 7 o'clock p.m. at Liberty Hall in Far West Utah. Liberty Hall, Far West Utah. The address, 3677 North, 2000 West. I'll put it in the show notes so you can get the address off the website, okay? But Lee Southwell has a story to tell like you wouldn't believe, and I'm going to be there. And I really highly recommend this is something that you check out as well. This is riveting. Leah, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Thank you, Sam. Pleasure to be here.
Now, give us a little thumbnail about who you are, Leah.
Well, who I am and who I was when I went to Chile. Which one?
All of it. Tell us, as a little girl, where'd you grow up? Who are you?
Well, you don't need my whole life story, but I'll start with why I went to Chile.
Well, give me a 30-second, though. You are an American citizen. You grew up in America, right?
Yes, correct.
Good. Continue.
Yeah. I also lived in Holland for 10 years and when I was in my 20s, and I thought that was the hardest thing I ever did and the best experience that I ever had. Very character-forming, very difficult path to live in a foreign country, to learn another language, to find your own way, and I did that all in my early 20s. And so when I was raising my kids here in the United States, I always told them that that was something as part of their education that they needed to do too. To live in another country, to learn another language, is to bring greater appreciation to your own culture, to your own language, to your own values. You really almost can only understand them by being on the outside and looking in. And so having lived in Holland and told my kids that they needed to do this too, I homeschooled them most all of their schooling, and they never showed any interest in it until they were 18 and 20. I had done all the research just in case they ever said yes, where would we go? That was my job. I was going to choose where we were going to go, and I had to wait to see when they wanted to go. So finally, when they were 18 and 20, 8 years ago, they were ready to go and came to me and said, let's do it. And so I said, okay, then it's my choice, and we're going to Chile. And I decided on Chile because I had followed the Economic Freedom Index from either Cato or Heritage. I don't remember which one. I think both of them have one. And for the 5 years that I followed it, Chile was the only one that was moving up consistently. Every single year they moved up in the Freedom Index. And by the time they were ready to go, Chile was at the 7th most economically free country in the world, and the United States was at 14th. And so with all the research that I had done, I felt very confident that Chile was a good, safe, stable country to move to. So we left almost 8 years ago for Chile with very little money, no Spanish, never having been there before, and packed our two suitcases, having sold everything we owned here in the United States for the adventure of a lifetime. I call it their homeschool final exam.
Wow. You and two children?
Yep.
Wow.
18 and 20. So they weren't children. They were young adults at that time.
Okay. And how did you plan to make a living on this venture?
We didn't have a plan.
Oh, wow.
So we literally dove into the dark. We arrived having... We had one distant contact who helped us have an address to go to and a school that we had planned to go study Spanish. And he showed us where the subway system was and how it worked, and he showed us where a grocery store was, and then he said, good luck.
And how did you dig in and find a place to live and get that start as an expat?
Well, we went to the Spanish school, and the teachers at the Spanish school were very, very helpful with everything, knowing that we planned on living there. So they helped us find most everything that we needed, and It was a slow process. I would say it was probably 3 years before we were really feeling comfortable and confident and that we knew what we were doing and had a plan. And then as far as work goes, my backup plan was that when foreigners come to this country and you don't speak English, you clean houses and you do yard work. And so that was what I told the boys we'd probably likely end up doing. And then once we got there, they said, no, you guys are gringos, you're upper class, and nobody would ever hire you for those things. So what they suggested was teaching English. And I thought, I don't know the difference between an adjective and adverb. How am I going to teach English? And they said that they just want people who will have conversation with them. So I thought, okay, I could do that. So I just started teaching English. My older son started teaching English, and then my younger son, about 7 months into it, finally found a job through one of my students, and that's how we started to live in Chile. But we were prospering through lots of difficulties, but we ultimately were prospering in Chile. There were lots of opportunities, and we were enjoying our stay there.
All right, so I'm going to summarize who is Leah Southwell. She is an American girl with an intrepid spirit, with an eye for adventure. And boy, did she get one. And we're here to tell you all about it coming up, ladies and gentlemen. How's that, Leah?
Sounds good.
All right, quick pause. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight is the event. It is at Liberty Hall in Far West, Utah, 7 p.m. Lee Southwell, Anarchy, Eyewitness Account. She goes to Chile. And she'll compare it to America coming up.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation. And we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Leah Southwell. I got a dental appliance in. Sometimes it might not sound like I'm saying Leah, but it's Leah Southwell, ladies and gentlemen. She's going to be speaking tonight at an event. That's 7 p.m. Liberty Hall in Far West, Utah. It will be an incredible event. Now, let's talk about, so you went to Chile with your children, I should say two young adults, if you will, and you went when?
We left November of 2012.
Okay. So you lived there actually for quite a while, huh?
7 years.
Wow. All right. So with that modern knowledge, let's step back for a historical relevancy here, Leah.
Very good. Historical relevancy of Chile?
Yeah. So in 1973, Chile's Socialist Communist Party, I guess president was removed, right?
Yes. So let me back that up just a little bit to 1970.
Sure. Okay.
In 1970, Chile was one of the poorest countries in all of Latin America. In 1970, through a three-way tie and a very narrow three-way tie, the winner was Salvador Allende. Allende was a known socialist, having had dealings with communists, and there was fear that he was going to bring communism to Chile. And that is exactly what happened. So the 3 years that he was in power, he nationalized all of the industries. The mining industry is the biggest industry in Chile, copper mining. He nationalized the farming, so the big land owners were all broken apart and given to the people. The mining industry was given to the state, and so this is the socialist paradise, is to take away the profits from the entrepreneurs and give it to the people. And so that was what was happening. But if anybody's ever studied history, what happens when you turn over land from farmers to the people don't know how to farm. So by 1973, the country was starving. They were days away from having the last of the flour bags to even make bread. So the Congress went to the military and brought in the military leaders and said, take back the country. So it was a coup from the military with permission from the Congress. And the presidential palace was bombed. That did not kill the president, but he either shot himself or somebody shot him before the military got in there. And Salvador Allende was taken out. After that, the military did take over control. The generals decided on one of the generals to be the president of the country, and that was Pinochet. Pinochet. And so many people have heard of Pinochet as the bloody mass dictator. I would say, yes, there were 3,000 people killed during that period of time because they were trying to eliminate communism from Chile. Cuba had been involved. Cuba had helped bring in arms to strengthen the communist powers. And so it's not an easy, bloodless thing to eliminate communists. They did do some good things, I think, which was knocking on known communist doors and telling them that they had 24 hours to leave the country. And so a lot of families, I believe somewhere in the range of 10,000 families, were forced to leave the country. So once Pinochet was in power, then they did go through some troubling times trying to revive the economy again. And then somewhere in the 80s, they brought in what they called the Chicago Boys. They trained the best and the brightest of Chile through the economic school of in Chicago about free market economics. And they brought that back and started to implement free market economics into Chile. By 1990s, Chile was the most prosperous nation in all of Latin America in a very short period of time with the introduction of free market economics. So this was
not only was it the freest nation, but the most prosperous nation, but it was by a long shot. Let's be clear, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, long shot in number 7th in the world we're talking about. And the unemployment when I left was below 5%. So it was booming. There was opportunity everywhere. And even though all of the presidents – okay, so let me back up again. Pinochet remained in power for 17 years, hated by half of the people and loved by the other half. He did voluntarily go for an election to choose whether they took him out or not, and he lost by a very narrow range. And so clearly half the country loved him, the other half of the country hated him. So in 1989 is when he stepped down and they restored democracy. After that time, all presidents in Chile were left of the center, but nobody dared touch the free market economic system because they knew that was what was causing Chile to thrive so well.
So it was an incredible, long, many, many year success story for the free market, first of all, right?
Yes. It was known as the Chilean miracle throughout the world.
The Chilean miracle. Wow. We need to be told that in school, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, no. What needed to happen was it needed to be told to the Chileans.
Well, that too, sure.
They didn't teach their history either. And so this is where I see that they went wrong and where we will go wrong too. When you don't teach the good part of your history and you teach a one-sided history, there's an extreme misunderstanding of how you got what you got. And so I was able to see right away that the human rights museums and pretty well everything about Chile, it was Pinochet bad, Allende good. Allende the one who brought them to starvation, Pinochet who brought them out. But that's ever since 89 was pretty well what was taught in the schools. So unless you were from a family who appreciated Pinochet and you heard it from your family, then you were told that that was a bad thing that happened to your country. So this is the setup for what happened exactly a year ago.
All right. What happened a year ago?
On October 18th, tomorrow will be the year anniversary.
Fitting your speeches tonight then, huh?
Yeah, it is. A couple of days before October 18th, there had been a series of price increase in the subway system. And this last one was 4 cents, and the youth, the high school students, and we have pictures of some of them with their professors, if that tells you anything, went into the subway stations and started to cause some disruption. They were jumping turnstiles, refusing to pay, and causing some damages in the subway system. Nobody took that terribly serious. It was high school students. But on October 18th,
hold
around
on, before
4
you get to October 18th, I want to make a point, though. On one hand, it wasn't serious. It was high school students. On the other hand, 4 cents to us is laughable. But
yes,
to some of the poor people, it was significant, though, right?
Well, I think it was significant in that there had been a series of them. I think it's still laughable from the students because the students paid one-third of what regular people paid. So you have to ask, why was it the students that were there, and why were some of them there with their professors? I want you to remember that professor statement.
Yeah, all right.
Because
so then
turmoil and chaos is obviously is often caused at the education level through the school system, and especially at the university level.
Yeah, so the poor people might say it's legitimate. The rest of us might think it's laughable, but the reality here is it was an engineered insertion point, wasn't it?
Possibly. I don't have the evidence of that, so I'm not going to say that's what happened, but you could say that, yes. So on October 18th at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the metro stations were suddenly being attacked. And I mean seriously attacked, like being set on fire, completely destroyed. The trains were being set on fire. And at 5 o'clock, excuse me.
And was this the students doing this?
At 5 o'clock when everybody's getting off of work.
Hold on, Leah. Leah, before you
go
continue,
ahead.
Was this the students doing all that?
No. At this point, we didn't know who. But who was setting trains on fires and destroying these, I think, went beyond the students. At this point, I think it was obvious that this went beyond the students.
So we have anecdotal evidence here, ladies and gentlemen, that there was an insertion point intended by who, when. We don't know if it was engineered from the start or whether somebody took advantage of something gone wrong or a crisis or an insurrection. I don't know. But the fact is, though, this was beyond some unorganized, a couple of students got mad because they didn't have the money discussion. That's the reason that I highlight that.
Right. One of the things that we knew from days later was the police did come out and say that the incendiary devices that was used for the burning and the destroying of the subway stations was not a chemical that could be bought in Chile. That was important.
So now you have international implications as well.
Right. Exactly.
And whether the students doing this versus that being part of it, or whether that just happened and then somebody else saw an opportunity to take advantage of it, we don't know the details of the connection there, correct?
Right, correct.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Leah Southwell is with us, and we're talking about her eyewitness account of what happened in Chile. She's speaking tonight. Leah Southwell speaking tonight. Anarchy Eyewitness Account. That's tonight at Liberty Hall, 7 p.m. More details in seconds on your radio.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
More than 18 million ballots have been cast in the country. Former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential nominee, remains ahead in polling. The Real Clear Politics national average shows Biden with a near 9-point lead over President Trump. The president appears to be hemorrhaging on two fronts, losing support with the elderly and suburban women. The president, at a rally in Macon, Georgia last night, went after Biden and his family.
That Biden family is corrupt. It's a corrupt family. And with me and my kids, let me tell you, my kids, I'll tell you something, though, and it's right to lock them up. You shouldn't lock them up.
Earlier at that same rally, Georgia Senator David Perdue mocked the name of his Democratic colleague and Biden's running mate, Kamala Harris. Democrats want an apology for that. They called it a racist dog whistle. This is USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
The product that you have given me here is, as far as I'm concerned, sent to me from heaven. I love it a great deal. It's hard to find anything that's real nowadays. I enjoy it immensely. It's making my life so much better. I feel so much better. And during this pandemic, I have no worries whatsoever. My immune system has got to be at a top-notch level. I don't seem to get colds or anything. I don't know what getting sick is anymore. This is so cool.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or by going to balanceofnature.com and make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
Employees at some tech giants, they're voters too, but where are they sending their money? USA Radio's Val Dior has a look at that.
Facebook and Twitter employees have sent more than 90% of political donations to Democrats so far in 2020. That amount includes all federal donations from Facebook and Twitter employees this year based on records available through OpenSecrets.org, a research group that tracks money in politics by the nonprofit Center for Responsive Politics. An analysis from the conservative watchdog group Media Research Center found the employees at both tech giants contributed millions in individual donations and in political action committee or PAC donations. For USA Radio News, I'm Val Dior.
Jacinda Ardern and the liberal-leaning Labor Party are cruising to re-election in New Zealand. With most of the votes counted, Ardern is well on her way to a second term as prime minister and the Labor Party a clear majority in parliament. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Our guest, Leah Southwell, ladies and gentlemen. She speaks tonight at Liberty Hall in Far West, Utah, 7 p.m. Be there. She will speak about her eyewitness account, anarchy in Chile. In 1973, there was a big old ripping crazy bunch of stuff going on that turned Chile into one of the greatest economies ever, based on free market principles. It went so well. Wow. But the problem is the lack of education. People only heard one side of the story and didn't understand the reasons for their success. And so Lee Southwell was an eyewitness to the event we're talking about right now. Basically in 2019, October, the children, teenagers started kind of getting crazy because they raised the cost of the subway. That started it. But then the next phase ratcheted it up, and no one knows exactly how. Leah, start there. So then the next stage got much more radicalized, right?
Yes, correct. Let me give you a little bit more context. So I was living in the city of Santiago, the capital of the city, and the population is over 7 million people. So this is a big city like New York City. So the subway system is quite extensive. It's the way most people get around. Cars are quite expensive there. You don't really need them. I never had a car while I was there. And so the subway system is like the blood flow of the city. So when that's under attack, you're in serious problem. So this was at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock, people were getting off work and finding that they couldn't get home because the subway system was shut down. Because within days, 77 of the stations were attacks and destroyed and damaged, some of them so badly that they're just now a year later reopening again. So there were some of the lines that have been shut down for a very long time due to the serious damage that had taken place. So once that and the panic started to happen, as happens anywhere, once the police are busy, then chaos starts to happen, looting and rioting starts to happen. The president did call out, the current president, President Piñera, he called out the military in a state of emergency, not really knowing or understanding what was going on. He probably thought that the country was under a terrorist attack, and so he called the military out into the street. That was a big problem for Chile because they had been under a military dictatorship for 17 years up to 1989. So having the military in the street was a very sensitive issue in the country. And so more people started to come out into the streets objecting to the military being out the street than they were objecting to the terrorists and everything being under attack in their country. So many people.
And hold on, let me stop you there, though. This is the lack of education that doesn't allow them to properly assess the context, right?
Right. Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
And so the stores were being looted. They were being burned. The protesters were coming out against the military and against the president now because their subway system was under attack. Now, not only the subways were being attacked, but the buses were being burned in the streets. The traffic signals were being torn down, and it was utter chaos, and nobody really knew who was out there. And within 8 days, there was a march on, I believe, October 25th on a Saturday, where they say there was a million people. It was a lot of people, but I don't know that it was quite a million. And suddenly a million people are in the street protesting about everything, about the private education system versus the public, about the private pension funds, about the toll roads, about injustices, every type of objection that you could have in a country. Those people were out in the street 8 days later, a million people. So you're under so-called terrorist attack, and the people were protesting the police and the military coming out and trying to stop it. And then there was just plain warfare between the people and the police and the military. And within 10 days, the president had to withdraw the military because there was such great objection to it. Now he's being called a dictator for trying to stop whatever was causing this chaos. Pretty shocking, disruptive in your mind, trying to grasp what's happening here.
Yeah, it's hard for the average American to even understand that kind of stuff in the streets to that level, right?
Yes. So a country that I thought was prospering and had everyone I had talked to said, you would not recognize this country from 20 years ago. 20 years ago, it was a nothing country. Look at all that we have now. I lived in the part of the city called Sanhattan because Santiago, Manhattan, it was the business district with skyscrapers, beautiful glass buildings. None of that existed 20 years ago. And now everyone's out in the street protesting everything about their life, and they want to overthrow it and have a better life. I was completely baffled.
Now, when you say you were completely baffled, you were in country. You were trying to live your life and do what you do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that was completely disrupted, right?
Yeah. But everybody still during this chaos was trying to live a normal life. And so the businesses were still open. People who normally took 45 minutes to get to their job were now taking 3 hours to get to their job. And then there was a nighttime curfew at 5 o'clock. And so they knew they'd have to take 3 hours to get back home again. So the productivity literally dropped to 2 to 3 hours per day. And then a lot of these stores were being looted. So people were losing their businesses, losing their jobs because their business had been burnt to the ground and the employees no longer had jobs. So it was an unknown every single day. You were living in fear. How am I going to get home? Am I going to take the subway station? And as I pop my head up above ground, there's going to be a battle going on with the police or the military, and I'm going to get stuck in the middle of it. Am I going to get caught in the tear gas fire? It was very unnerving.
So what did your sons do? Did they take it well?
Well, one of them had returned to the United States. The other one was living with me. No, we were in contact with each other, trying to watch the news, listen to the news, A lot of it was pretty well known where the activity was, and so you tried to stay away from that, but it would move around. Most of it was in the evening. It would start at 5 o'clock, and nighttime was really bad. And you were just trying to be as careful as possible and still go about your way and hoping and thinking this is just a temporary flare-up and it'll go back to normal. But it didn't. It lasted week after week. The president was being demanded to step down. Thankfully, he did not step down. But the other primary call that was being made, and by who, I don't know, was for a new constitution, because the constitution of Chile had been written under Pinochet, under the military dictatorship, in his favor to keep his power. But once he was out in 1989, they started the process of amending the constitution. And there had been close to 150 amendments to the constitution. And in 2005, the socialist president at that time, Lagos, re-signed the basically accepted constitution that all objectionable things had been taken out, and a socialist president signed this quote-unquote new or acceptable constitution, and the people accepted it. So before October 18th, I had never heard a word that their constitution was a problem, and suddenly the call was that the new constitution would solve all the problems of Chile.
In, so then wickedness, I started the process. In wickedness, they change the affairs of the society. And when they do, oftentimes it's for abusive purposes. Now, let's draw a parallel that I think is really important to understand here. So on one hand, you speak of this incredible prosperity, free market principles. On the other hand, you speak of this dictatorship with kind of a dictator at the helm. It was really both, right?
It was really what?
Both.
Yes. Well, they were not under a dictatorship at that time, but there was a dictatorship from 1973 to 87.
But that's where all that prosperity was happening too, right?
Exactly.
And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because...
So I want to say a dictatorship is just maintaining power. You're not democratically elected, but you're maintaining the power. I want to say, and I don't know this because I never knew Pinochet, I want to say that he understood that you don't implement free market economics during your four-year period. Free market economics does not take hold over a four-year period of time. It takes a couple of generations. So I want to say that he knew in order to save Chile, in order to eliminate socialism and communism, and to let the free market take hold, it was going to take a couple of generations of him maintaining power and not letting the socialists and the communists take back the government.
And the reason that I bring it up like this is because in a way, that's what we see China and Russia and some of these other countries embracing, a kind of a similar hybrid, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, because on one hand, China is a complete communist country. On the other hand, it's embracing free market principles and working with Americans. It's a different country, and it's evolving as well. But they're holding on to power is the unique point. And they don't have the Constitution, as you mentioned, they have different constitutions, because they don't have the Constitution like we do, where the checks and balances have the seeds sown in for solution. America goes off track, and if righteous people get together and stand for what's right, we can correct the ship, if you will. Some of these other nations don't have that opportunity. Ignorance in the people and a lack of proper role of limited government is at the helm. When we come back, we'll tie it to America with Leah Southwell. She's speaking tonight at Liberty Hall, ladies and gentlemen, 7 p.m.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Leah Southwell, our guest, speaker tonight at Liberty Hall in Far West, Utah, 7 p.m. Lived in Chile for 7 years, Holland for 10. Expat experience like you wouldn't believe. Peaceful. She loved it. She lived in Chile for 7 years, but it all went off the rails as violence erupted in the streets in 2019. And boy, was it interesting to observe. We don't know who, what, how, where, why on the details with regards to who done it, etc. But things changed quickly, and she had a front row seat, to say the least. That will be the topic of discussion tonight when she speaks at Liberty Hall. So, Leah, I wanted to highlight those parallels about some of these countries because they realize that free markets are the only way for them to take their countries out of complete poverty, and they look good as they hold on to power as well, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Well, I think you need to keep power in order for free market economics to survive. It's not a political issue. The people have to start to see the benefit of it.
But it's hard for them to see if we don't teach them these principles. If they don't learn
Absolutely.
Them over generations, it's hard for them to understand that. They throw freedom
yes.
away, don't they?
Yes, they do. Easily throw it away if they didn't know how they got prosperity in the first place.
All right, let's talk about America. Does it relate?
I think yes, and that is that the Constitution is what holds it all together in the limitations of power. The Constitution is what makes changes difficult and for overthrow difficult. So when this call for the new Constitution came about in Chile, I started to ask everyone I knew, what objection do you have to the Constitution? And no one could tell me anything specific, no specific articles. And so that told me they didn't have any knowledge about the Constitution. And it was disturbing of where did this all come from, this call for a new Constitution. So I had a lot of friends from Venezuela living in Chile because Venezuela had lost its country. And all those people, productive people, had to go live in a different country to earn money to send money back to Venezuela. So I asked my Venezuelan friends, what do you think about what's happening in Chile? And they said, Leah, this is exactly how we lost our country. We were the protesters in the streets in Venezuela. We were the ones who voted for Chavez because Chavez promised us all kinds of things to make our life better. And it sounded good, and we believed him. We were the ones who voted for a new constitution. And the number one thing that they wanted in a constitution was to eliminate the two-thirds majority and make it a simple majority. And that is how we lost our country, and we can never go back. We don't have a country anymore, and we did it to ourselves.
They get thinking that democratic principles in a pure democracy really will save them, and the truth is it's just the opposite.
Exactly. So something as simple as a two-thirds majority is vital to the existence of a liberty-oriented country, a constitutionally-oriented country.
These are the keys to the checks and balances that make America so great.
Exactly. And so that's what the socialists and the communists are after. That's why they're after the Electoral College. That's why they brainwash everybody that it's democracy, it's justice, it's fairness. And this is the conversation that's happening now. And I really think that if they allow Trump to win, that they will go after the Constitution here in the United States like never before. The media, we know, is against us. And the media will start talking about how the Constitution was written by slave owners. It was written that black people were not even considered whole people. It was written for muskets and not semi-automatic weapons. And it's desperately time for a new Constitution. I think they can also take us down a serious bad path with eliminating the Electoral College, which they certainly are attacking right now. And my belief is any attack on the Constitution, any attempt at amendments or changes or constitutional conventions are incredibly dangerous at this moment because the socialists and the communists are waiting in the wings to have their influence on any changes that are going to take place. And that will, if you crack the door open, they will eliminate and destroy the Constitution and everything that we once stood for.
It's hard to know how to respond to this because if Trump wins, they'll attack the Constitution big time. They'll attack the Electoral College. They've already made kind of inferences of that, but it'll ratchet up. But if Trump loses, what'll happen? In other words, I don't see a great scenario in both cases for peace and liberty.
I agree. And chaos is the way that they also bring your next dictator. And there could possibly, I know this has never happened in the United States, but anybody who has studied much of history knows that coups happen regularly. And this is a possibility in this country to have a coup and take out our president if he happens to win and they don't want it. They've been trying it through other manners, a coup, but a physical coup could occur in this country also. But when there's chaos, this is the other issue, when there is chaos, somebody will arise from that chaos and promise solutions and promises to stop the chaos. That's a very dangerous moment because people will vote for someone who promises them good things, but then once they gain power, you lose your country, as in the case of Venezuela and Cuba. And
the point
I fear
is when
this is
chaos,
the direction Chile is going also.
When there's chaos, there's always I'm trying to think of the right word. There's always a vacuum when it comes to power, and somebody with force will fill it.
Force or influence. So Hitler was an excellent speaker, right? He had everybody
yes.
memorized. So is this what mesmerized, sorry, will we find a very mesmerizing personality who will come and convince the 51% that he can save us? And so this, over the many years of talking of democracy, has really done us damage that we believe that a simple 51 majority should be able to control the 49%. That's not how our government was established.
Yeah, that obliterates the checks and balances that made America great. The reason I say by force is because what happens is they do whatever they can through charisma and personality and promises, and if that works. If that doesn't work, though, they always eventually take the next step. They isolate,
power.
Demonize, and destroy.
Oh, right.
And so, for example, you know, hey, they tried to say, hey, Black Lives Matter. Now they're forcing their will in riots everywhere.
Yeah.
Is that similar to what happened in Chile? What's the next step after that?
Good question. An interesting difference is that communism, the number one goal of communism is to divide the people. So there's two ways that they usually divide, either by race or by class. In Chile, it's a very homogenous society. Well, actually, there's two interesting things about that. You can either divide them by class or by race. The initial attacks, I think, was on the injustices of the big businesses who had benefited so tremendously from this Chilean miracle that it was, they want to say, merely the big corporations that were gaining and the little people had not, which is not true. They had brought them from 70% poverty to 7% poverty. That was huge. And then bringing back the race issue, what's happened later over the months after this chaos began is they went to the indigenous Indians of Chile and started to stir trouble with them. Now, there's been trouble for many, many years with them, But it's quite severe right now. The south of Chile is where the Mapuches live. Those are the native Indians of Chile, and are stirring them against the government. And so a lot of this protest is between the Mapuches and the Chilean government. So that's the race war, and then they've got the economic war, the class war going on.
And they don't care how many fault lines or what fault lines they use. The divide and conquer tactic is the key.
They just need chaos and the people divided. And fear and blaming. So this is another thing I want to bring up, and another issue that happened. The president that was before President Piñera was Michelle Bachelet, a known socialist. She also has no problem working with the communists. She, after ending her presidency, became the United Nations High Commissioners of Human Rights. Big red flag there. When this chaos started, she went around the world and the media helped her in saying that this president was committing gross human rights violations by using rubber bullets and tear gas against the protesters. And protesters were getting injured by this, and that they were merely peaceful protesters.
And this is why I say that with international agitations around the world with the media helping, that's why I kind of say this is, at some point you connect all the dots and you go, this couldn't be an accidental situation or just a few teenagers hanging out. This was an intention because of the global and the media implications and some of these leaders stepping up to the plate right at time to bat. You can't ignore those. Do you call them coincidences, or do you say these associations, whether they created the crisis or whether they're just taking advantage of the crisis, don't know. Nevertheless, that's the reality, right?
Correct, yes.
All right, what's going to happen to Chile and what's going to happen to America?
Well, for Chile, the referendum for the people to choose whether they wanted a new constitution was originally agreed for in April. Because of the virus, it was delayed. And it is now coming up October 25th, very close to us now. And sadly, my prediction is that at least 70% of the people will vote for a new constitution. And we have to think, just like here in the United States, if we had to have new founding fathers to write our document, who would be the people at the table there? We know from Cuba and Venezuela that the socialists and the communists were definitely at the table, and they were able to win enough things to destroy their country. It doesn't take much. Just change, for example, to eliminate a two-thirds majority can destroy a nation. So I don't have a good feeling for what's going to happen with the election. It's going to be at least a 2 to 4 year project to get a new constitution, and then the people will have to vote on it. What's going to happen for the next 2 to 4 years when none of their problems are being resolved? I think these protests are going to continue for the next few years. And will a new constitution solve any of their problems? I don't think so. The problems that they were complaining about were not constitutional. They were cultural. And I think that's something that people need to take a look at, too. What is the reason for your problems? Is it literally the law, or is it you, the people, and your culture that is the problem?
The lack of education and the lack of understanding where rights come from, that is God, in obedience to his commandments, oftentimes is the key to the demise of many, many, many civilizations.
The lack of morality, yes.
All right. What do you predict for America?
I'm very disturbed. I'm very disturbed. I'm very worried. I don't know what will happen, but I kind of agree with you. Whoever wins this election, I don't see anything pretty happening. And my passion is educating people as fast as possible to preserve the Constitution and do not let them touch it.
Ladies and gentlemen, who is Leah Southwell? She's really turned into an intrepid reporter with a first hand eyewitness account of what happened in Chile, and she's very adept at comparing that reality to America. Ladies and gentlemen, riveting presentation coming up tonight, 7 p.m. Liberty Hall in Far West Utah. If you could say one thing to America, one phrase, one statement, Leah, what would it be?
Know what makes us great as Americans and understand the enemy that will always be there attempting to take us down.
Ladies and gentlemen, we declare this nation shall endure. lovingliberty.net, God Save the Republic. Thank you, Leah.